Okay, hello. Thank you for coming. And the meeting is going to begin in a few seconds. Basically, how it's going to be structured is I'm a William Parker, and I'm a musician, and advisor to the Vision Festival. I don't organize or plan the Vision Festival in any way. I'm just an advisor. There'll be an opening statement by Patricia Nicholson, who is the organizer of the Vision Festival and the spearhead of this particular movement, which we're calling Rise Up Creative Music and Art. The time is now to claim our right to space and support for creative, innovative music and integrate art into the community. Then I might say a few comments after Patricia. And then we're going to invite certain people who are doing things related to what this program is about to speak about what they're doing, and then have an open mic for people to speak about the issues, and then close out with the reading of our proposal for committees to begin to meet and actually do something in regards to the problems that we're going to be addressing here tonight. Okay, so Patricia.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming. Thank you, William. They didn't have their sound system hooked up, so we brought down our bass amp so you could hear us. All right, I wrote this out, so I'm going to read you what I wrote. Rise Up is the name of a new organization. We morphed from a group that came together around the closing of Tonic, but this is a broader base, and it's clearly what I'm proposing here is a pressure group to realize what needs to, what we feel that we can do and what we feel needs to be done. It's a movement of the arts. We are fighting to get an adequate music venue that is centrally located in Manhattan and to be donated by the city of New York. The fact that this has not already happened is a grave oversight that must be remedied as soon as possible. We know that the city is now concerned about an affordable venue for innovative music. And they're also concerned about affordable housing. But thus far, that concern has not translated into substantive action. I mean, they do have some affordable housing, but it's grossly inadequate, as anyone looking for an apartment well knows. Artists are used to upgrading so-called bad neighborhoods. Then rents go up, and neither the artists nor the poor nor our rapidly shrinking middle class can afford to live there. New York needs to learn how to be proud of its creative, innovative artists and its unique and economically and culturally diverse neighborhoods, and understand the creative role that art can play in keeping our neighborhoods safe and healthy. How do we function as an organization? We need to form committees to address each of the problems that we face as artists. And I'm not going to read the list now. I'll read it later, and that's about signing up for committees. When a group of people come together to address a problem, they have power. How much would someone have to pay you for each of you to come together and work for even 1 hour? This is our power. We can come together with our unique abilities and donate some of our time to achieve what needs to be achieved. Maybe we can't bring about an equitable peace in the Middle East and stop all the killing that war brings. But maybe we can get a venue for music. Maybe we can build a community arts center. Maybe we can have music in school playgrounds as well as in auditoriums. Maybe we can have live performances in soup kitchens. Why not? And homeless shelters. And in every community center in New York. Maybe we can have a new Jazzmobile with a larger musical mandate, bringing music and all the other arts all over the city. Wouldn't that be great? Maybe we can build housing for senior artists. Maybe we can fight for affordable housing that some of which has soundproofing so that musicians can live there. Why not? Now, one of the things that's really important to me is the way that we work together and the way that we are together. And it's really hard to bring together a diverse group because everyone has their feelings and their egos and their everything. There are tons of baggage that we all carry around. So we need to be mindful of how we deal with each other. We're not perfect beings, but we must always have as a priority the idea that all who we deal with are treated with respect. We don't need to be best friends, but we do need to treat everyone with respect. We should not look on anyone as our enemy, even if we sort of feel like they are, but as someone who we hope will understand and who we need to understand as well. In this atmosphere, it makes possible we are better able to accomplish what we set out to do. We all like to be right, but the trouble with that is that it implies that someone's wrong, and no one wants to be wrong. But if you reach out and listen and speak in a way that others can hear, then you can have another friend instead of an enemy. Now, I know this sounds like I'm giving you a moral lesson, but it's actually just a practical, pragmatic kind of thing. It's so much more effective if instead of being pissed off and angry at the way other people do you and don't, then you, instead of being pissed off, you listen to them, and then you calmly explain what you're trying to do. You try to convert and inspire instead of complain and harangue. I feel it's really a lot more, works better. It just works better. I know. I mean, I do it even when I don't feel like it's something. I don't always do it because I'm not perfect. But I find that even when I'm feeling cranky and I force myself to say something nice, gosh, it's incredibly effective. It's ridiculous. Anyway, now there's some other notes I have, some really practical things about what we are planning to do and what are really possible to do. But maybe at this point, that's like my opening statement. At this point, we should invite others to speak, or William wants to say something, and then we'll invite others.
So this program that's going to be proposed is basically a program of empowering and improving the situation. I mean, that's the goal. It's not the first time It's been done. And but at this time, 2007, it's very important that if we start something, that we see it through to the end. Because a lot of people in this country have been getting away with murder. And a lot of our great artists have died without really, you know, reaching their apex as far as public awareness. When I walk down the street with my bass and a little kid stops me, you know what they say to me? They say, "Mommy, what's that big thing?" And, you know, we would like to get it so that a reach out programs to the community, because you see one of the things that's been missing is that art's been taking or not existing in the community, where families, they go out to dinner, but how come a family can't go out to an artist's art gallery to buy a painting for the kids' walls and put up on the walls? Yeah. How come a family can't go to a concert together? You know, why is it always the aficionados and the diehards? Because they don't know that we exist. They don't know that we love them. They have no idea how many ways a trumpet can be played or drums can be played. They have no idea that the colors, the match of colors that can be thrown on a canvas, or the combination of words that can be put together that would really enrich their lives, because they are being given the worst kind of vanilla on a daily basis. And we don't get a chance to speak to them, because we're busy going to Europe and trying to do our thing. You know, art is taken seriously enough where you can get a degree in music, a master's degree, bachelor's degree. But then after that, you come to New York and there's no work. All you can do is turn around and get a job teaching in a university where you teach others and they get a degree, and then they come to New York and they can't get a job, so they get a job in a university teaching others, and then it goes around and around, so you have this big pool of people with degrees in music who've never done a gig, who've never played a note, you know. So there are umpteen potential programs that are on the agenda. You know, this is a long program. This is just the first step. It's not going to come around overnight. You know, it's going to take some time and perseverance and some effort. Okay. Because you can't change the fabric of a society overnight, okay? It's going to take, because they've been working at keeping art underground, or they call this like downtown, or for years. You know, art is very effective. You know, there's a political reason why artists are not taken seriously. You know, how many times, you know, you told when you were becoming a musician or a dancer or a poet, you know, well, when are you going to get a real job? You see, the thing is that the art is a real job. Our souls are dependent on art and music because it feeds our spirit. And what's wrong with America is our spirit is underdeveloped. Most people in America have underdeveloped spirits because it has never been developed. Because they have some sort of intellectual knowledge, but they really haven't tapped into their souls. See, and what happens when people listen to music, it changes their lives. You know, when people come to a concert or they get a book of poetry and they read it, they say, man, I'm going to quit my job tomorrow. That's what it's supposed to do, you know. And I'm going to quit my job. Or like somebody's about to go to Iraq and you play him an alto solo, you say, I'm not going to Iraq. Thanks, man, for playing that for me. I'm not going. You see? But if they don't hear us, they don't know we exist. We've got to put a big effort into saying, here we are, we exist, this is our music, this is our art, this is our dance, this is our poetry, okay? And give people an option to what they want to choose. And when this happens, this program is something that we may benefit from and we may not benefit from. But if it continues, the next generation will benefit from it. See, those kids who are 10 years old, in 10 years, if we can start a program, then when they're 20, and the next generation of kids, when I walk down the street with my bass, they'll say, Mommy, is that a three-quarter or a half-size bass? Is that a Juzak or German bass? Because the program will have worked. And once, you see, America is based off of swing of spirit. And once the spirit swings this way, you have a lot of sleeping giants. You know, all those people that eat at McDonald's are sleeping giants. You know, I mean, being an artist is not just just for certain people. Everybody's got the spirit inside them, and they're waiting for someone to free them. And that's what art does. So when these programs kick in, this is what will happen. And the idea is to not take no for an answer. Okay, the idea is that we will succeed, and things will eventually change. Okay. Now I'd like to invite some people up who are in the audience who have been doing some self-determination acts throughout the years, and we all have been doing them. You know, of course, whenever you produce your own concert in the 70s and you get a flyer and you put the flyer up and you get the space, that's self-determination, okay? Because it's like, well, if I don't hire myself, nobody's going to hire me. If I don't produce my own music, no one's going to do it. But at the same time, you know, the government of America and the foundations have a responsibility to, if you're given a large sum of money to feed the poor, you're supposed to make sure that all the poor get fed. And what happens is that sometimes when large sums of money are given to institutions, is that they don't spread it around. You know, there's nothing wrong with having the music of Paul Whiteman played or Benny Goodman. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we give you money to, you know, but all the music should be played. All the musicians should get a grant. You know, in Holland, all the musicians get money to rehearse. They get money to write music. It's not just the King of Swing gets money. The King of Space Music gets money. You know, all the musicians get money. Okay? And that's what should happen. All musicians and artists should get money to present and develop their work. You know? And all programs that, well, let me just say this, because we're going to move on, right? We're going to wrap this up. When Jimmy Carter was president, we had the CETA Artist Program, which was a program where you would audition and you'd get a job as an artist, a 9-to-5 job. And it lasted 1 year. And musicians were working for theater companies, for dance companies, and it showed me that it could work. If you put artists to work, the temperament of New York City was beginning to change, you know. And it ended when Jimmy Carter, you know, had his concert at the White House with Ornette Coleman and Cecil Taylor, and Charles Mingus was there. And I spoke to Ornette Coleman about this a couple of weeks ago, and he said that they were smoking dope that day in the White House. And he smelled it, and it was happening. And so you knew at that time that Jimmy Carter had to go. But the fact that that had happened, that it can happen again. And things can change. Anyway, so let's start. I'd like to invite Mr. Ahmed Abdullah up from Sister's Place to talk about a few things that have been happening in Brooklyn.
Thank you. Sister's Place is a place that I've been working at since 1999. We've been, and Sister's Place comes out of an effort on the part of a group, an organization known as December 12th Movement. The history of that organization is that they had come together years before around some other incidences, but the initiative that brought them together around Sister's Place was the a boycott of Korean merchants in Brooklyn that were acting in a very unfavorable way towards the people of the community. So the people at Sister's Place were involved in that boycott, and eventually they said, well, why should we boycott Korean people? They have a right in capitalism to open their own stores. Why don't we open our own store? And they opened a greengrocer in Bedford-Stuyvesant on Nostrand Avenue. And then someone came along, and it was Carlos Garnett, in fact, came along and said, well, are you going to have music here? And they said, why not? And it happened to have been around John Coltrane's birthday, and so they decided then that they would have music at Sister's Place. And that was in 1995. And you have to understand, because I heard Patricia talking about something about the history of the neighborhoods that we find ourselves in that artists come to, and then what happens to those neighborhoods, because Jefferson Avenue was a crack-infested block. There was a person who was murdered right across the street from what is now Sister's Place before the people of the December 12th movement came and decided to organize that block and make sure that the crack dealers did not deal crack on that block. Now houses go on Jefferson Avenue for $800,000, and most of the people who are living there can't afford the rents and the taxes that that have to be dealt with there in the heart of Bedford-Stuyvesant. But we still managed to be there. So Carlos Garnett became the first music director of Sister's Place in 1995, and I came there in 1998, And I was very fortunate in that a man named Paxton Baker, who was a friend of mine and who was the senior vice president of Bet Jazz, I met through my workings with Sun Ra. And he said that, wow, you have you're involved in a community institution, let me help you out. And he's been helping us out since 1999 and giving us a grant so that we can at least have some form of funding that allows us to bring in top name groups every now and then, and other people who don't have reputations. So we've been doing that because, number one, the people who formed the Sisters Place were organized and were committed to the idea that culture is important. In fact, the motto that we have at Sisters Place is we say that culture is a weapon. And it's a means of improving your condition, for sure. So we've been working with that, and in as late as 2004, after I've been working there for a few years, a person from Italy saw what we were doing, and he asked us to come and become part of his series in Milano. And we did that, and after doing that, we decided that having seen this happen once within the music in the 1970s, we were all, many of us here were involved in the Loft era, and we saw that the music was then taken from us, and it was called Loft music, and it was considered a music that you didn't have to pay anything for, so the musicians weren't paid anything, you know, as a result of being playing in the Lofts. We decided that we would jump ahead of that gun, and we would call the music that was coming out of Sisters Place and out of the community and organizational efforts that we were making, we would call it music of the spirit. And that's what we've been working on since then. I've been very fortunate that in the last 3 years, I've been working down the street at an elementary school teaching music there to young people. And so our effort has been to try to build community on the grassroots level. That's what we do at Sisters Place, and we have tried to work with other organizations within Brooklyn, within the Central Brooklyn Jazz Consortium, which houses a number of other venues that that also do jazz. We've created a festival every April in Brooklyn. So these are things that we've been attempting to do, and I think that the ideas that I've heard expressed by Patricia and William here, I think ideas that certainly we would want to get behind and involve ourselves with in any way that we can.
Thank you. Question?
I've got three of my own, so how could I not talk about children? One of the things Cooper Moore was mentioning that one of the things we did at Sisters Place was we had a Father's Day celebration about 5 years ago, and he asked, "Have you done any more?" And we haven't done another Father's Day celebration since then, but it was a wonderful thing because fathers came, and Cooper was saying that his son had not known of his efforts as an artist. And one of the things I was remarking was that I don't think anybody in Max Roach's family, when they funeralize him on Friday, will not know that Max Roach was an artist. I think it's a very important thing that oftentimes when we as artists leave the planet, sometimes people in our family take over and they forget somehow about the part of us that was the artistic part. And they celebrate one part of our being without celebrating the artistic part of our being. And so it's very important that people see us, even though we may, in a 24-hour day, we may do a concert that lasts 2 hours or 1 hour. Artists are very much a part of who we are. And so it's very important that our families really see us as artists as well as seeing us as other, as human beings. And so what we try to do at Sisters Place is we try to bring the family into what we're doing. My daughter comes to the concerts that we have on Saturday nights, every Saturday night that she can be there, you know, because we believe that it is, that's part of building community. Building family is building community, you know, so that's what we do with children, yeah? Hope that answers your question. Yeah?
Thank you.
Your families are very, very interesting. You know, when I see my aunt, she, you know what she says to me? She says, Billy, you still playing that big thing? Okay, so we'd like to bring Mr. Mark Rebo up now, who will talk about his experiences starting from the closing of the Tonic and on forward till now, and kind of just tell you where it's at and, you know, clarify things. And here's Mark.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I wasn't really prepared to speak tonight, but I'll try to say what I say it as I remember it. A number of us decided when Tonic was closing that it would be good to use the closing of Tonic as a focal point for doing some organizing around getting, around getting a space, around getting policies and getting a space for musicians who are playing this kind of music where we can play and make money. I add that second part because there seem to be plenty of spaces, and they seem to be, you know, there's a number of spaces that are willing to book people. What seems to be disappearing or in very short supply are places that book people in New York and pay. You know? We got tons of places. We need money. And I noticed in Ahmed's description of the Sister Space story that a key moment seems to have been the point at which you guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, the point at which you guys got funding, which made the music program possible. And so what we wanted to, you know, we conducted a protest the day Tonic closed, and had gotten a bunch of papers, got in a bunch of the newspapers, and we attempted to meet with politicians based on this. A number of you who I see here participated in those actions. What came out of it was several things. We met with politicians about the possibility of getting a space. And I'm going to ask, my memory for names not being the best, I might ask Barbara Birch, who's over there, who set up a Brecht Forum, and Noise Cabaret, who set up a number of those meetings, to name the names because they may be of interest to people here. The people we met with.
We had a press conference on the steps of City Hall that was we were assisted in that by City Councilman Alan Gerson. And we met with the Manhattan Borough President's Office staff. And we had a lot of conversations with, Martin, State Senator Martin something.
Connor.
Thank you. Martin Connor?
Yeah. Right. Connor,
state senator who was very supportive, who we hadn't met with, but we met with his staff. And apparently my memory is almost...
There were also community board meetings, right, about... because there's a couple of spaces in the neighborhood here, the former markets, what are they called?
Essex
Streets markets. The process, to sum up what happened, the process of getting a space proved difficult. I don't think impossible, but it seemed to me from these meetings that the city has very carefully insulated itself from it's very carefully insulated the part of the city which takes over buildings for back taxes from the part which makes political decisions that could give that, right? As I understood it now, you know, back in the day 20 years ago or something, probably when this place was given to the community, if the city had a public building that was no longer used for its function, or if it took over building for back taxes, then if you exerted enough political pressure, you could convince the city to give it to you. Now, apparently, properties that the city takes automatically for back taxes or that become disused for the original purpose automatically go to directly to an auction to which only banks are invited. Was that so? So even willing politicians who might want to who might understand that we have a worthwhile cause are not. It's much more difficult for them to help us out. All that doesn't mean that things are impossible. All that means is that for anything to happen, there would have to be a very broad and very willing coalition of people to exert a lot of pressure about it. And that, you know, basically a number of meetings were held, and in which we tried to involve different presenters and different musicians in participating in this. I think there that's where things stand now. There was difficulty reaching exact consensus over exactly what kind of coalition, over exactly what kind of space, and over exactly who would manage it. But I think it remains a worthy thing to keep fighting for and to keep doing. And that's that.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, I was part of that group. And this is morphed from that. I think that one of the things that I think it's very achievable for various reasons. I think it's absolutely achievable that we can get a space. But I don't think it's going to happen quickly. I think that all of the issues are important, though. I mean, like, that we're talking about. I'm gonna read through this committee list. This is, like, I only had running out of toner and paper, so I only made 15 copies of the full list of community things. And I also have this little introduction saying that it's at this point, I don't really expect to fill up all the committees. I think there needs to be a few people at least on each committee, not too many, but enough to get good people working on I think there's 12 committees here. That's like not reasonable to expect. But we'll see how it goes. And I think that we should sort of focus maybe on some of them. But I want to read it through quickly. Because I have a lot more information on here than is in the thing that was handed out. I gave you a one-sheet version. Under Publicity Committee I still have ACMA, because that was the name that we came up with as that other group was falling apart. And so I thought we actually should have a new name, and I forgot to take it out of here. Anyway, it's not ACMA, it's Rise Up Creative Music and Art. No name is perfect. I hope that one works for us. Anyway, Publicity Committee for Rise Up activities would make sure that the press stayed updated on activities, and we would the person people on this committee would have to keep it interesting and keep a great updated press list, send out regular press release, phone calls, all of that, creating angles, documentary filmmakers. We need writers to keep articulating the messages. We need a letter writing campaign. There should be pre-addressed postcards and letters available at all of your performances that are addressed to your local politicians and press and heads of different media, depending on exactly what you are pushing for in any thing. But we would try to do a little fundraising so we could have cards available. I mean, because I was told by a few people that petitions don't work unless you have thousands and thousands, and that there are a lot of work to do, but that it doesn't take that many letters or postcards as long as they're handwritten, but they can be pre-addressed. And there should be an action committee, people coming up with ideas for, I don't think they won't have many, but like the regular town hall meetings maybe once every 3 or 4 months, and demonstrations and concerts which are specifically targeting issues or highlighting issues, a media committee. Then that means, unlike working on radio in the good old days of yesteryear, you could hear a real broad range of music on the radio. This isn't true anymore. Why? What can we do about it? But I really believe that we can do. If we have enough people really focusing on this, we get a little support, I think we can get it done. TV, work on coverage on shows like, well, if we have connections, The Tonight Show, you know, for example, BET, Conan O'Brien, Brian, Tavis Smiley, Like It Is, PBS. You know, finding connections on TV and figuring out how to work them. You know, it feels like on PBS that they're equating, the idea that jazz is dead was sort of put forth in that wonderful documentary that left out all of current jazz. That was very unhelpful. I was like, really? Anyway, so a print media needs to have new standards. I believe that knowledge about what you're critiquing is important, and that should be made to be important. Look at what is not happening in print, why is it not happening, and find creative ways to bring attention to this. That's another committee. Black media. Black journals don't cover a jazz. PBS, RN, oh, blah, 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 I'm not going to get into that, NAACP, Music Awards, etc. The fundraising committee. We need a fundraising committee if we're going to really be successful. And here, like right now, I'm sort of arts. I have an organization called Arts for Art, and I'm sort of kicking off this new organization. Now, exactly what I kind of feel that it probably has to become, if it's really going to be successful, will have to be its own 501c3. First, I was against this, but when you start getting into all the details, you realize maybe it should have its own 501c3. But for now, since I'm doing some of the work, or quite a bit of it, it'll be under Arts for Art, I guess. Anyway, we need to raise money for so many things, I'm not going to get into it. We need to get in touch with anyone who has connections to celebrity. That's a good outreach. It's very effective outreach. Community outreach and audience development. Student outreach. We need to do word of mouth campaigns. That means when all y'all and everyone gets around, everyone talks, right? So you get together and you talk, and what do you talk about? Instead of talking trash, we need to start getting excited about what we're doing. We need to have music workshops available in different communities, saturating a single community. Maybe have, until we get funding, have some volunteer work, making sure that there's so much music in a community, it's easier actually to get funding if you already have something going. It's one of the stupid things that they make you do. Make inquiries into already existing community arts programs, see if we can create goodwill with them, including them in our struggle. So instead of it's just us against the world, we need to embrace everything that is. I read out a lot of the stuff I was working on to some woman on the airplane who has a dance school where she teaches acro and tap. out in Hicksville, Long Island. She thought it was great. I said, has it got too much about improv? And she said, no, you can never say enough about it. This is some dance teacher in Long Island. She doesn't think this is too far out. We need to, we have a committee that should make connections between music, art, and environmental and political issues. I think I'm talking too much, and I'm boring you all, and I should give you all a chance to talk. All right. So we need, that could be a whole committee. There are people who are really interested in those issues, and that's another way of outreaching and building support and building our communities and stuff like that. Blogging, working on our web presence. This shouldn't take very many people, just but people who are crazily dedicated, you know, to getting everything out. I think that this person, gentleman here, is going to, I think the word is punkcast this. So we'll be, this whole meeting will be on the web, which is, I think, pretty a good beginning. But this kind of thing has to happen. We need to really have a web presence, because especially we need to reach young people, and they're on the web. Finding buildings and spaces for housing, for senior housing, for performances, and for community arts centers. We need people to analyze find and analyze the Spitzer report and see what Attorney General Spitzer, I can't remember his whole name, located all the abandoned buildings in New York. There's a list somewhere of city-owned and privately-owned buildings. We should get a hold of that. That would be useful. We need people who want to walk through neighborhoods and identify appropriate-looking spaces and look into them. There's a green building that's being built on the East River. It's City Planners Plot East River Waterfront Makeover. And I think you make connections with SolarOne.org. That's something I was a politician. I want to connect with them, and they maybe have space for something in their facility. At least they should know about us, and we should know about them. All right, well, we have to begin to articulate basic ideas about what would inform the way any space should be handled. That's a big one. All right. And a little note is under housing, we're going to invite up Connie Crothers, is working on that. Senior housing, Wendy Oxenhorn from Jazz Journalists Association. If there's anyone from Jazz Journalists Association, they should come up, just say something briefly about that. And a community arts center, which is one of my dreams, but if there's time, I might talk about that. Communications, extra office work. I mean, like even getting you all here, Todd Nicholson, Todd, where are you? Todd Nicholson in the back there, he did a lot of work with me. There he is. All week long and the week before, doing the work that made tonight possible. This didn't happen by magic. This was time and effort. And so there's we need people to make mailing lists of donors, politicians, foundations, music and art lovers, volunteers. Those are separate mailing lists. So we have to find volunteers too. We need to write and customize letters to each specific group, personalize them as much as possible. Should we follow up letters to VIPs with phone calls? Determine what needs to be sent to each person. Get more info about them or money. How much additional literature, if any? I mean, this is just work that has to get done just normal work, you know? And so you need people to do that kind of work. All right, then last but not least, we have the Million Artists March, which would be like this dream, the culmination of everything. It's all of the concepts to be spread out onto a national level and really including, we're starting with the music community. We hopefully, if we can get a little bit going here, it should spread to every arts community, and then it should spread around the country. Because everything that's relevant to us as musicians, although I'm a dancer, so to us as musicians, and me a dancer, and is relevant to all the artists and anywhere in this country. And really, you know, I want about the importance of art. I know William was talking about it. I just want to just my little angle on that. It's, if you can imagine, you know, I referred to it because I'm so happy about this idea about like music in a playground, but it sort of is a good indicator of what art can do. If you have music in a playground, you probably wouldn't have kids freaking out so much. You would have, if you have like artists, they're just there not to teach, just to play their music in an informal kind of way, that so that they're available. Then you have a chance for dialogue, you have a chance for really lifting people up on different levels. I mean, I think that art is magic, but it's not totally intangible. It has real concrete, almost measurable effects. They've proved that if they teach art in the schools, that in general, the kids do better in their academics. Why? Well, I'm not sure exactly. Maybe someone can analyze it all down, but they have done the studies, and it is true. So there are measurable positives. If you're in not everyone's a great artist, but everyone is creative. And if you're if you live in a society where creativity is being exalted, is being given credibility, then creativity in everything is going to be more present. And we won't be just a bunch of like, oh, life is so overwhelming, what can I do? I just have to do what I'm told so that I can make enough money and feed my family, and I have no hope, really, much future. Well, hope I can make as much money as possible. It's really horrible. And a little short digression, because it's another of my favorite things. I watched a program on PBS, which, God bless them, they have every once in a while a really inspiring program, and they were talking about the 50s and the 60s, when America was proud of the fact that it had affordable, that everyone could have a good life. And that has been now what America is trying to do, is better and better and better, and better and better and better means for a few, and most of us get less and less and less. So the shrinking middle, instead of like everyone being able to have at least one house and maybe two, because you could buy your summer home at, this is the truth, at Macy's, you could go to Macy's and buy a summer home on Montauk, for 800 square foot summer home on Montauk that would be fully furnished for $12,000. They would build the house, fully furnish it down to the toothbrushes for $12,000. Well, it was a good amount of money, but it wasn't, that would be maybe equivalent to, I don't know, about $100,000 now. And that's a lot of money, but some people, middle class people, maybe could like scrunch and afford it. But for a summer home, you could get a hold on Montauk. And everyone could afford a house, almost. Now you can afford shit, if you're lucky. All right. Now, I'm sorry for talking so much. I really want to, there are other people who are doing things like Connie, and anyone else who really would like to speak, be ready, I want you to speak. And then I want you to sign up for committees, because I want us to do things. But first things first. Connie?
Yeah, right.
If you want to sign up for a committee before you leave, go over there. Please don't be shy.
Thanks, Patricia. Oh, about 3 months ago, I responded to an idea that I found out about the Bloomberg initiatives, which was, I looked up on the internet, it was in a couple of speeches that our mayor made about the city getting behind buildings for for artists to live in, recognizing the fact that there was a severe crisis, that artists were leaving the city in unprecedented numbers because they could no longer afford to stay here. And so this was his spoken wish to address that problem. So I thought, well, all right, I'll just write him a letter, because it seemed to me that the unique needs of musicians had never really been addressed. We need buildings that are soundproof. And also I feel that we need to live in buildings where there are in-house performing spaces, preferably a large one and a small one, rehearsal rooms, recording rooms, so that it could be a building that would function for our needs. Also, in front, we need buildings where we can actually afford to live, so that we can live our lives as musicians and not go into the treadmill that's held out for us more and more, that we have to work so hard just to be able to pay the ever-escalating rents that are going on here. Now, I got a letter back, not from the mayor, but from somebody from the housing and...
HPD,
yes.
Thank you.
And though he did not reject my letter out of hand, pretty much a carefully worded letter let me know that this is something we could not really think about in the foreseeable future. So I thought to myself, all right, we can do it. We're resourceful people. We know we are. You have to be a resourceful person just to go down the road as a musician in this world, just to keep yourself on this road. You have inner resources, and we're a community. Because we're musicians, it's in the very nature of our art form to be a community. We have resources that we can draw from if we pull together. So I sent out an email to that effect, and this was about a month ago. Since that time, the response to this very simple email has been astonishing. For one thing, I had the great good fortune of hearing from Patricia, and we got together and talked and realized that we were traveling on the same path, and that there is so much we can do. I also met with Wendy Oxenhorn of Jazz Foundation of America, and she was wonderfully encouraging and suggested that we might be able to work together to achieve these objectives and expand them. And since then, I've also had conferences, informal conferences, with many other people who have wonderful ideas, I'm sure, that have been presented that you know about already, such as, if we have a building, it should be a green building. I've had very wonderful consultations with the wonderful Margaret Davis, who had the incredible, to me, great idea of concentrating on having made perhaps our first musician run to live in, to perform in, and to have community spaces in. Perhaps we could look at Harlem for the very first one. Also, we're dealing with something that's been touched on before, and we're all very aware of this. The false antagonism that's been created between the artists and the people who live in the neighborhoods that artists can afford to live in. It's like the artists come into the neighborhood, and the people who live there, they right away they feel they're going to lose their homes. And we all know about this dynamic. It's very well publicized. And this is an artificially created antagonism that we must address. I don't feel that the city will, or the politicians will. We have to find ways to address this. One of the things that I've considered is that in the building where musicians live and perform, we can have areas which are only for the use of the community. For example, I envision a building where there is a room set aside for instruction, for musical instruction for the children of the neighborhood. And we could either be funded, or if we can't get funding, perhaps we can find it in our hearts to volunteer our time to give musical instruction to the children in the neighborhoods. One of the things that Max Roach told me through the years many, many times, and I'm sure that he's told many of you here, he was very vocal about this. He felt that hip-hop evolved the way it did because the children in the neighborhoods could not get musical instruments. There was and still is plenty of improvisation, but there are no musical instruments, and I feel that this is something that we could address. We could find ways to either get funding or among ourselves to get some kind of resources to be able to, through this community building, have instruments that these neighborhood children could have with them and evolve their own music coming from instruments that they have in their homes and that they could bring over to this building for their musical instruction. And we have a way of passing on this wonderful music that we were so fortunate to inherit from the ones who've come before us. I guess that covers it. I think that covers it for me for now. I don't know if people have questions, but I am now working on this, and I'm in an outreach phase, consultation and investigation and getting ideas together. And anyone who wants to contact me can do so by email or by phone. And
well,
also,
if they sign up on the sheet over there for this, we'll give you their contact stuff. Like I hope that you'll be in charge of this committee, like the committee of people working on housing. I mean, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I mean, like, I'm just trying to, like, does that sound right
sure.
to you?
The one thing I might say is that I feel that housing is a bedrock issue. We all need to perform. Without performance, we can't live as musicians. And we need performance spaces. But we cannot have a musical community if musicians can no longer afford to live here. We're in a crisis right now, and I think that we artists, we musicians, we must address this. I agree with William very much that we need to see this as a process of self-determination. Yes, we will try to get funding, and we will lean on the people who have these sources and can help us. But we must see this as being self-directed and self-controlled, that we want to be empowered to act for ourselves and for the communities that we will be living in. And creating our art in communication with. I don't know if anyone has questions, but this is the end of my presentation anyway.
Thank you, Connie. Please, 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 if you don't sign up before you leave, email me or, you know, you can email Connie directly about this.
Quickly, Patricia, is that sign-up sheet still going around? There was a notebook that was going around.
I don't know.
Did I ever go
down? Is the notebook lost? Anyway, can we locate the notebook? Who else wanted? Someone from the Jazz Journalist Association wanted to come up? Is there anyone here from there? Who? There's lots of people here. Come up and speak.
Are you coming up? Nope. No, you're coming up. He's using the... I introduce you.
Hi, my name is Aaron Friedman. I started a group last year called Make Music New York, which was a one-day event involving, I think we had 560 concerts on sidewalks and parks and streets, all taking place on June 21st. And I've been interested in working on some other issues involving music in the city as well, including making practice space available, excuse me, for musicians, and also the idea of having a dedicated venue that could replace Tonic, which is one reason I came to New York in the first place. But with this group, I'm just not really sure it seems like there's so many different issues to work on and so many problems, and I'm very accustomed to lobbying and going to city officials and potential funders and discussing some of these issues, but without some one easy or maybe two easy concrete things that we're looking for, not quite sure how to approach the problem. I mean, if we say that we want to create a flourishing lives for musicians in New York, I mean, who could say no? But on the other hand, what exactly do we want them to do? And especially for politicians who are not accustomed to seeing artistic problems as real problems, I think we need something that's really obvious and concrete. And of course, I have my own personal preferences for what these could be, but I just want to know if there's some way we can make decisions. I mean, just personally, I mean, it's totally random. Like, I've always had trouble finding practice space. And I mean, I know a lot of people have the same problem, but it's one of many problems. And I guess anything that involves some project that maybe can address a lot of these issues at the same time, where you know, we're actually promoting some particular demand, and in the arguing for that demand, we say, well, this is really important because of the role that art plays culturally, economically, and spiritually to the people of New York. But
what you have needs? You're doing something now?
Yeah, well, I'm just writing music on the piano.
Okay, but do you have any projects that you're doing now?
Well, I've been running this nonprofit.
Do you need help?
Personally, I need money, and I've been trying to actually expand this music festival not only to be on streets and parks and sidewalks, but also hospitals, prisons. I'm meeting tomorrow with the head of the music program for the NYC public schools. So
I think we have some people here who can help you.
That would be great. That's not why I came, but that would be great. But
what's your name again?
Aaron Friedman. I'll
see you later, Aaron.
All right, I'll be here. Thanks. My email address is makemusicny@gmail.com. The website is makemusicny.org. And we're going to be doing the same program again next year. June 21st will fall on a Saturday. This past year we had quite a few musicians, and also some organizations like the Metropolitan Opera did a concert outside for free for this day. And we hope to expand both of those.
I just wanted to explain to you and everyone why I didn't prioritize. I didn't prioritize because I figured I would get, I mean, I have what I think is obviously, you have to prioritize. You have to pick what you're going to put first. But I also felt like I didn't want to do that. I wanted to also let it be natural selection a little bit. I was sort of hoping to see who signed up for what. And then, like, if I had too broad a thing, then I would contact all those people and say, listen, we have to focus. Because you're right, you have to focus. But I wanted to know what people's burning issues were. And that's, I mean, I can tell you what I think. And but also, I can tell you what I'm doing. I mean, like, I'm working on getting a venue. I think that I probably can get a space, not a building, but a big space enough for performance and rehearsals in maybe 2 to 3 years. You know, and...
I have something.
Yeah?
Can I say something?
Sure.
I'm loud enough that I don't really need a microphone, right? Okay. One of the things that... See, I'm going to get feedback even if I don't talk. One of the things that we were talking about... I'm Barbara Birch, and I work with... I volunteer with the Brecht Forens Noise Cabaret Music Series along with some of the other people out there. And I was involved in organizing the last few months, and one of the things that I don't hear in this room that we have to keep saying is that New York City... It is very important to maintain this city as a cultural capital in the world. That's not only important to us, that's actually important to Mayor Bloomberg, it's important to the corporate leaders, it's important to all kinds of people that we think don't pay attention to us, don't take us seriously, don't know we exist, and won't give us what we want. So, you know, that is something we have to keep the eye on. That has to be a ball that we keep our eye on. That is very important. And you talk about what's the sort of issue that you could focus on and talk to people about. New York City has, you are part of maintaining New York City as a cultural capital in the world. You're a reason that people come here. You're a reason they buy plane tickets. You're a reason they book hotel rooms. They spend money in restaurants, and they come to see your gigs. You bring people here. So don't think that you can't use that and take that seriously. That is extremely important to the people that you want to talk to up there in the City Hall. Another thing is that last week, two flyers came across my desk at work, and they were these beautiful full-color flyers, and it was a request for proposals to redevelop two decommissioned firehouses, one in Williamsburg and one on DeGraw Street in Brooklyn. And the potential, now they're not going to give this space to anybody. They're talking about you can put in a proposal. If you have a nonprofit, you can put in a proposal, and they'll maybe lease it to you. But one of the main things, potential uses that they were interested in is cultural space, exhibition space, and performance and rehearsal space. And clearly, this is something that's on, you know, having New York City as a cultural capital, maintaining our cultural spaces and our cultural vibrancy, our artistic vibrancy, it is important to the people in power. And we have to be at that table. It can't just be Lincoln Center at that table. It has to be you. And then the last thing I want to say is Community Board 3 has a new Arts and Culture Task Force that we met with back in the spring. Was that all the way back in the spring?
And yes, it was in May.
Oh, my God. And their next meeting is at the end of September, so if you want to get on their agenda, Patricia, you can email Paul. And they are very hot to trot to send a resolution supporting these efforts to the community board to try to get at least the community board to make a resolution. The community board doesn't have a lot of power, but it does. It is, you know, why not get a resolution from the community supporting these initiatives to get a space, to get a permanent home for this avant-garde creative experimental music in its place, in one of its places of origin, a very important part for it to be in the Lower East Side.
Yeah.
My name is Mosa Bildner. I'm a Brazilian American, and I've been living and working as a composer and artistic director for 20 years in Lower Manhattan. And I really feel that everyone here has the same desire and the same wish, and all, you know, what people are saying is very beautiful. But the bottom line is we need money. And we need to get the money from, as Ms. Birch said, the people to whom this matters the most. And these are people like our mayor, Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg has one of the largest private fortunes here in New York, and it's kind of a well-known secret that as the good Jew that he is, he anonymously gives away a lot of money to several organizations here in New York that he believes in. I think instead of, you know, writing letters and stuff, which is great, I think really we should get together, or some of us should get together, with a proposal that has a very focused demand, what we decide that we really want to ask for first, with a business proposition, because these people are business people and they want to see a budget. We have a 5-year plan for doing this, this, and this. We want to have a building. We want to have a building that has spaces for rehearsals. We want to have a building that invites the community in to participate in projects, which later they can perform for the broader community. And what is the community? Are we inviting other groups, or is this just this isolated group here? We have to identify these things, and we have to put a budget to it and a business plan, because we need to approach these people who have money, not like some politician here and some, you know, community board there, because all these people are going to do is, and I know because I've been going through it for 20 years, they invite you to their office, you have a wonderful cup of coffee and a fabulous connection and a nice conversation with them, and then it's sort of you follow up, and nothing really happens ultimately. You have to go straight to the top and get to people, and it's not hard to get to someone like Mayor Bloomberg. It may seem like it is, but I'm sure between everybody here, there is somebody who knows somebody else who may be on his staff, and you can get a proposal with plans on it. They want to see a concrete plan. They don't want to hear about our dreams and I envision this and I envision that. They want to see a plan because they're business people. And we have to speak to them on their level because they're never going to be on our level. There's no way they can understand what makes people live in this crazy way that we have to live. So we have to show them that we understand the way they think and give them a proposal that they can understand, which is extremely concrete and which has, you know, a timeline and shows that thought has gone into it and it's organized. Thank you very much.
Right.
My name is Ralph Horn, and basically I'm more from the background of electronic music and the community around that, and been involved with political issues around that with the cabaret law context here specifically, but before that when I lived in Seattle on similar issues. And the recent thing that I hope you guys are aware of, some of you probably did participate in it, was the Picture New York campaign, and that was a success. I mention that because it was a success. It was the thing where we basically put off a law or a set of regulations governing the use of picture taking and videography in the city. Right? So that was a specific thing that came up, and the success can contrast to the cabaret law was that it was a new thing that was going to be imposed on us as a restriction, and it affected everybody potentially. So it was easy to call attention to it and at least hold it off. Okay. I want to mention one thing that I did go to help out with Aaron's project, and it's probably one of the most important things I've seen here in the past couple years, since I've come back from New York, because it covered the whole city. That's a crucial thing to me here tonight, hearing to what's going on, is that although there needs to be a specific proposal, and I hope you guys do center on housing as the issue, it needs to be a broad thematic campaign that everyone in New York can relate to. So since I'm more in marketing these days, this is what came to my mind and my creativity to bring to you tonight, was that one potential campaign would be this. You know, remember the art of living together in New York City. And I think there needs to be a focus on a practical political level of constituency. You mentioned going around to a number of things, Aaron. We haven't talked in a while, but I would hope that the focus actually would be on seniors, on senior housing, on senior community centers, on facilitating artists of all sorts, donating some of their work, and having the broad public pay for those donations to senior housing, et cetera, and at that time funding these efforts, taking some of that funding and setting it aside to fund the efforts that you're talking about tonight. It's a very practical, very doable level. There's plenty of e-commerce things that do just that nowadays in all sorts of ways. It's very doable.
I'm not a, I don't know if I'd venture to say it, nobody in here knows me, right? So, first, my name is G. Way. My legal name is Pierre Dillard. I am a longtime engineer, experienced in construction, mechanical engineer. Had my own practice for 20 years, which I retired from 10 years ago. And I've returned to my original love, which is music. My dad was a professional musician. I got the love of music from him as a child, but I chose to take a more conventional route to make my living, which is what I've done. But I was drawn here by the pure energy of the graphic in this AM/PM newspaper. I don't know how many other people saw it, but it's the reason I'm here tonight. Something drew me here tonight. So I feel is a spiritual purpose behind this. What I've found over the years is that artists serve a very great purpose in the world, and that is to maintain sanity personally and at large. Musicians and our graphic artists actually do a lot more than we give ourselves credit for, I think. We keep the world as sane as it can possibly be. And at the rate that things are going, I think we have a mission, which is to really step up and do more to take care of ourselves as well as the people who appreciate the contribution that artists make. So I'm here tonight to work. I'm going to join a committee, maybe more than one, because from your list I can see where I can contribute. But one of the things is I'm a senior, and I expect to be around at least for another 20 years like my dad was, kicking it out. He died not as a wealthy man physically and monetarily, but his love of performing for people was the fortune that he left here with. And what he used to tell me all the time is, you know how many people I've made happy just by playing my horn? And that was his big payoff. So we need to organize. This is great. I'm here to be a part of it, to become a part of it, because I want my future life to become more predominantly performing and helping performing and graphic artists make a good living as well as make a bigger contribution, not only in New York, but the world. I thank you for letting me speak. I won't go any farther except to say that there's a much greater cause behind all of this. Right now, it's about making a living. It's about fighting off the developers. It's about surviving in New York in general, which is steadily becoming a city of the rich. And unfortunately, artists don't seem to have too much of a prominent place in the general scheme of things. But I think we can change that. I think we can turn the tide. I think just by organizing and doing some hard work, and holding on to our love, which is performing. You know, one of the things that I've seen over the years is that because we love what we do so much, very often we forget the fact that we're involved in business. The sister mentioned that, you know, we need to approach these business people as business people. And there's a big, big, big element in what we do that is pure business. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I won't go any farther. I'm going to get to know many of you, hopefully, over the coming years. And I'm going to join up, and I'm ready to roll my sleeves up and get to work, because you got a lot of work to do. Thank you. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Yeah. All right. Come on up.
I'm Jason Huang. What I'm hearing is that we don't have money now, so we have to be in the position for something exceptional to happen. Because we know, like, these buildings are worth so much money that no one will just say, okay, that's a good idea, you can have that building. You know, or that, you know, the argument for the New York City as a cultural capital, the bean counters will just look at like how many people are drawn to Lincoln Center, the major museums, the opera houses, and they say we're doing okay. You know, I the argument can be made, but I do think that people who don't understand culture and music and all the beautiful ideas being expressed here, they'll kind of like be a little bit uncomprehending. So I think what Mosa was saying too is I think we should focus on a plan, a vision, you know, to be in a position for something exceptional to happen. You know, something concrete that someone can say that, like, I can get behind that. That can be implemented if these people are given the opportunity. And it has the type of energy that drew that gentleman to this meeting. If we articulate that vision, I think that good things can happen. So that's what I was hearing. Thanks.
My name is J.D. Allen. I'm a saxophone player. And I think we have something to offer them. Of course, you need a business plan and things like that. But I like what William said in the beginning. We should focus on the community. You know, I like it's like what Marvin Gaye said and what's going on. Save the babies. Save the babies. You know, we have problems in school with obesity and kids killing each other. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and I'm living proof that music can save your life. You know, really. You know, I've been shot at. I've been in situations that maybe I shouldn't even talk about right now, but music saved my life. I'm a living example of that. You know, I'm here today breathing because somebody came up to me and said, hey, man, you know, pick up a horn, you know, take it out on your horn. And having that angle, going to these people with that angle, that we will save your life, because if you don't put us in the community, there's going to be some guy out there that might stick you up. Think about it. So let's give the young kids a horn to play. You know, let's give them something where they can express themselves and let out aggression and poverty, or maybe they're going through something at home. You know, that's an angle. That's something that's concrete. If we go to these people and tell them, like, look, you know, we want to enlighten your community. We want to be what we really are. It's not a selfish thing. Like, we want a place to hang out and play our music and have a practice room and stuff like that. We're doctors, you know, we're spiritual people. Our purpose for playing music is to heal the world, to feed the universe. So we do need a business plan, you're right. And we already have something that we do. We're doctors, you know, we're musicians. You know, we feed the spirit. And to bring it closer to home is, you know, save the babies, save the babies, save the babies. You know, let's get back to what he was talking about. It's like the community. Ain't no grown-up going to come to these gigs sometimes, but if we get their kids to get into it and not pick up a gun or a knife or a box cutter on the subway at 3:30 in the morning, you know? So think about it. Save the babies. You know, that's the plan. And William had the right idea from the jump. You know, the community. The kids should be able to walk down the street and not ask me, is that a machine gun in your case? You know, they should say, well, I got a saxophone too. What kind of reed you got? What kind of mouthpiece you got? You know, we should have conversations like that. So we already got a plan, you know, save the babies. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Hi, my name is Jana Herzen, and I have a record label named Motema Music. Some of you may know some of my people who are on the label. I just want to say thanks for pulling this together. It's really been amazing to listen to what everybody said, and I really loved what you had to say there about America being a kind of a spiritually undeveloped place, and what JD was just saying about, you know, saving the babies. I've been running a jazz label for 3 years. I got into jazz very late. I used to be in theater. I've been around the world hanging out with all different Aboriginal cultures and different things, so I have a big passion about what it is that every human being has in common, and absolutely, like, music does reach. I personally can say from my own personal experience of picking up my guitar with an Aboriginal guy who had literally never seen a white person until he was 20, so was really raised in Aboriginal culture in Australia, and here I was, this white chick showing up with this guitar and singing to him across his campfire, and I couldn't understand a lot of what he said, but one thing was clear. You know, you'd finish one song, you'd say, "One more, lady." You know, he would always ask for more. And as you know, I've been skirting this interesting balance between trying to run a business with jazz, trying to communicate. Somebody was talking before about how we have to communicate what the value is of jazz. You know, my everyday, you know, thing I get up every day is, how can I communicate why somebody should buy this record of jazz, or why they should book this jazz musician? And I spend a lot of my, you know, creative energy, even though I'm a musician myself, I spend a lot of my creative energy thinking about how it is to sell what it is that I personally value so much that I sometimes put my music to the side so that I can promote certain people who are doing things that I feel are right from the heart, right from the spirit, and help me develop spiritually. So I do think that the whole, you know, in focusing this, what JD was just saying is so true, what many people have said tonight, that we have to really get what our own value is. Each person in this room has to really get it. And was your name? What was your name? You spoke about business.
Mosa.
I mean, Mosa spoke so well, and I know that experience too. I've been running, being involved in not-for-profit organizations. In fact, we just opened up the Hughes House up in Harlem, Langston Hughes' house, which we actually have. We're providing a lot of what we offer a space for musicians to come in. Unfortunately, I can't afford to pay people all the time to come in. I say you could have the space for, 50% of whatever you can bring in. We'll use the other 50 to run the place. So that's what we're doing with that right now. But, we do have to present as business people. We have to be business people for ourselves. And then we also need to really get it, what this art is that all of us need to grow spiritually. We all need to hear each other's art, experience each other's art. I find a lot of musicians are very focused on needing to get their own thing done. And the more that I've teamed up with other people and I have people on the label that play with each other and promote each other, it's a wonderful experience to have artists all getting together. So I'm loving having this whole group together and would definitely like to help by coordinating. So
I just want to interject one thing, and then we're going to have some more talkers, speakers. There's one thing, I think we have to remember. I mean, all I see in the city is buildings going up, okay? And the idea, what I think is basically politicians who you're trying to ask for money are criminals. And we forget that. You see, we forget that, you understand the expression, power to the people? They work for us, you see, and so now we're going to them to ask them to give us a building. Think about that for a minute. I mean, that's like somebody coming in your house and then you have to ask them, can you go to the bathroom in your own house? You see, I mean, these guys are crooks. And eventually the whole structure of the way this whole thing has got to change. You see, for us to really accomplish what we want to accomplish. Okay.
Well, I don't know about following that. Hi, my name is Judy Balow. Some people know me as Jazz Judy. I'm one of those diehards at every concert everywhere. I'm not a performer, but I could say that music has really touched me and that I see it as a very healing thing. And I think there's a lot of approaches. I like when you talked about the Million Arts March. I mean, one of the ideas that I don't think really happened at the Million Man March was if everybody gave a dollar, there'd be $1 million. If everybody went on this march, and, even if we only had 500,000, whatever, if everybody gave a dollar or more, we could raise the money that way. Bloomberg has enough money to fund everything if we were able to reach him. I wound up by accident at the Department of Small Business Services, which is a city agency. I don't have a relationship with Bloomberg. But, I think a lot of people's focus that we have to approach it as a business if we're going to try to raise funds outside as opposed to from the people, that we have something to contribute, that it's healing. I see it as an intergenerational, not just focusing on seniors, not just focusing on saving the babies, but putting it all together. I think, a housing community that's intergenerational, that's also a performance space, I think that idea could really go far and that we could reach a combination of funding, of self-funding and funders, and really make it happen. So I think this is really exciting, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Hello, my name is T.C. III. I'm a singer, jazz vocalist, and first of all, I think this is a great idea that William and Patricia have spearheaded and saw, it's covering a lot of issues. And I got so many things running through my head right now. I don't really know what like point I want to make, but I didn't want to like leave here and be talking to myself all the way home. I've been singing at a club called St. Nick's Pub in Harlem for 3 years, every Sunday. I sing and I host an open mic. And I've done like everything that I could think of to like promote my own gig. I mean, I think like one of the biggest problems that we have with art and music in this city is that the media is jive. Anybody in here from the media, anybody got a contact with the media, you know, on TV or in the magazines, the newspapers? I mean, you know how hard it is to be an artist in New York? I mean, we need a buzz about this organization. A buzz needs to be created about, like, what's happening. You know what I mean? We got a lot of great ideas. You know, the proposal thing, that's what we're going to have to go anyway with the 501c and this and that and all the different things that we need to do to get the dough. But we need a buzz to be created about, like, what's happening. Because without the buzz, it's just like a drop in the bucket. You know what I mean? Like, because everybody's trying to do the same thing. You got everybody's trying to do a gig. Everybody's trying to promote. Everybody. I mean, it's like, I don't want to disrespect anyone. And, you know, Max Roach just left. You know, Evan Blakey just left. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, the great masters of art. I mean, Picasso is gone. You know, look, we are the musicians and the artists that's living right now. And the thing, and look, like, check this out, man. Look, like, you know, look, I can sing some Train solos, you know. Train is gone. No disrespect to Train and all the masters before and all, you know, Ellington and all that. But we have, like, the masters, like, you know, we continuing, like, you know, we on a pilgrimage right now. And the media and the radio, look, man. They got a thing on WBGO where, like, they won't even play but certain amount of vocalists now. It's just going to be, like, instrumentalists. You know what I mean? And they took a poll from people who, they weren't even musicians. I mean, so, you know, like, our thing in the media has to look, it's got to be, like, this is a guy playing, you know, saxophone or whatever. You know, we got to talk about him in the media like he's trained. You know, like the piano player, like the young cat, we got to talk about them in, like they're monk. You know, the people that are writing their own music and creating their own thing, we have to do that. Because if we don't do that, then we're lost. It's almost like, I mean, it's like, you know, it's yeah, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, what does it mean? So the buzz and the positivity has to come from, like, each one of us. Whatever your own thing is, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm so busy trying to do my own thing, I can't, like, go to everybody's gigs. And I love everybody, but I'm just trying to pay my rent. So I'm just saying, you know, the media has to, we have to get some hookups in the media and the newspapers. And, you know, I was thinking about not even singing no more and just start writing. You know what I mean? Because, I'm just saying, you know, like, I want to do something. You know what I mean? I really want to make a difference. I feel like, you know, I sang at Lincoln Center. I'll give you an example and I'm going to be done. I'm from Philly originally. And they had a program called the City of Reveille Jazz. And I sang there, you know, on the concert with Jimmy Heath and all the cats that was on that program. And the write-up was a great write-up, but they gave me a sad write-up. And I said, I was like the newest cat on stage. So, I mean, we have to find a way to respect the up-and-coming artists just like we respect the people who are gone on, because, I mean, what are we going to talk about those cats for another 100 years? I mean, come on. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just wanted to say that because, you know, we need to show love within each other. And if there's a cat or somebody is playing or singing or an artist or whatever, we need to talk about them like they are what's happening. You know, like, oh, man, you know, you heard Train, but have you heard J.D. Allen, you know, or whatever. You know what I mean? Excuse me, like, you know, but whoever, you know. And I just think that's real important. So for this organization, I think to really have to really, really get off the ground outside of the business plan is the buzz that we create about it. Thank you.
That's the media committee.
I'm going to walk right in here and say something. And the city has a TV station. It's called NYC TV. And in fact, they have a program called New York Noise. And for the first two seasons of that, it was the girl that ran it was at Smith College, and she wasn't here. So it was about 80% stuff that I went out and shot in the clubs. And then she came back and she got there and she's an intern. And now she shows a lot of like music videos and stuff that don't have a lot to do with New York. And they do show some good stuff on that station. But I think a concrete proposal that you could get your teeth into is getting a show, getting some time on that station where you could show the kind of stuff that's going on in the community of music, that's going on in the community of music and art.
Thank you. All right, I need you to sign up for the media committee, please. Yeah, and also that
what was his name? Hi, my name's Steve Wishniak, and I'm a bass player, but I've also been editor of Tenant, which is the newspaper of the Metropolitan Council on Housing, for the last 11 years. And I'm going to steal a line from a poet I saw the other night on the bill with us in Jersey City. He said, I don't want to be pessimistic, but we got to be realistic, which is that we're going up against the most politically powerful and greedy force in New York, which is real estate. You know, they see Tonic, they say, well, you know, a 20-story luxury condo is worth more money than Tonic, bye-bye Tonic. We can get $40,000 a month for 315 Bowery instead of $20,000, no more CBGB. So we're up against that. We got a short-term goal and a long-term goal. You know, the short-term goal is of creating a space that could replace Tonic, you know, and that might be possible. There's, you know, a group called Picture the Homeless just did a survey of abandoned buildings in the city. There's still a lot of them. There's a whole bunch in East Harlem. There's a couple hundred in East Harlem. There's even some in Midtown. There's one on 57th and 9th Avenue. So that might be possible. But the long-term goal is probably something that's going to require a major social transformation, if not a revolution, which is we need to create an urban ecology where musicians can thrive and our audience can thrive. We need affordable housing for musicians. You know, we need affordable housing for our audience so they have, like, the time and money to come out and see us. You know, and we need affordable housing for, like, the 19-year-old kid who just started playing bass 2 years ago. So in this, you know, our natural allies, we could hook up with the tenant movement because, you know, that's what William was talking about before. You know, we got to hook up with the community and make, you know, alliances with the community because it's about all of us here in the city. You know, it's not just about us, you know, being musicians and wanting to have something for ourselves. Like, we want something for ourselves, but we want to be able to give back to the community.
Thank you. Go ahead, Rod. Oh, wait, no, you have to wait. I think who was online? I don't know. William?
Yes, well, he's online.
Yeah, but he doesn't.
All right, William,
I'll make it brief. You know, everyone's ideas here were good, so, you know, we should get together and, like, implement each idea as a strategy. You know, and I sort of remember the decreasing of interest in this music, which was somewhat intentional, but that's a different conversation somewhat. But I just like to say that the ideas about reaching out to politicians who on a personal aesthetic might not even like quote unquote this kind of music, to reach out to them anyway and try to, you know, what Masa said earlier and what everybody's been saying basically, because artists are kind of getting marginalized throughout the boroughs, you know. And that's not a good thing, you know, because we carry the message of what's happening with working people. We're part of that, just like the garbage man and the doctor and everybody else. So I just wanted to say, you know, every idea that's here, you know, let's get together and implement each idea as a strategy for overall goal in general, you know. And it's hard because even some people that have some sort of leverage with this music, for instance, I was listening to WKCR, and I'm really not going to name any names because of solidarity, but they haven't left Max Roach's past. And he had so many beautiful bands, you know, and they haven't left a certain era for like 5-6 days, you know. But the whole thing is beautiful, so it's hard to say that. But, you know, we have to sort of improve that a little bit. Sometimes I might feel it's intentional, you know, because some of the music that came along later that was a little bit more expansive was doing things for the consciousness of people, especially young people, you know. So, you know, in order for capitalism to flourish, the people keeping it alive have to be brainwashed somewhat, you know. But I don't want to get off the topic, but let's, you know, let's everybody implement each idea we have and do that. And I'd like to say John Coltrane does live on. Thank you.
How you doing? My name is Gerald Cleaver. I'm a drummer. And I just wanted to say a couple of things. We've been talking about a lot of different things, namely that, you know, it's pretty tight out here for us, and we're not recognized the way we ought to be, and we're owed some things, which I agree with. But what I want to ask you all is to ask yourself, what do you owe the community? Because we are a part of a large community. And speaking about what William said, what JD said, the gentleman who was here, a couple, what was his name? The one, I'm sorry, he just left. He, you know, we owe something to those kids that are down the street on the playground, to the senior citizens, to the people in prison. You know, we're a part of that same community. You know, I grew up in Detroit too, and I'd say that 60% of my family is or was in prison. So it's not a mistake that that happened because they chose for it to happen. But along the line came a person who impacted JD's life, and along the line came several people impacted my life, and I'm sure the same types of things have happened. We all have varied histories. But the thing is, most of the time, music keeps us from self-destruction, and it's a good catalyst. So we need to share those types of things with young people, and with everybody, for that matter, for people our age. So the battle is, I mean, it's a multi-front battle, you know, with lots of things need to happen, of course. And each one of us have different skills and different temperaments and different gifts that we all need to put forward. But the thing that I think is most important is that we be galvanized now, because nobody else is going to do it for us. You know, a lot of times we get into this grumbling mode. Yeah, I feel that way too. But I think that we really, I mean, if we think about what it is that we need, like William said something kind of shocked me. You said, don't they know that we love them? Remember you said that? Talking about, who are you talking about? You know? You're talking about the community. We love the community. All right, so you know what? The real estate developer could be an asshole that's that's super rich and he has his agenda, but even that kind of person can be changed too. And maybe even easier, their kids can be changed. So the way to get to them could be through the kids. So that's all I wanted to do, is ask you all to ask yourselves, what do you owe the community? Of course, you know, we are already kicking out the music and the arts. Yeah, we're giving that. We're definitely, that's a big thing that we're giving. But now, here we are sitting all under the same roof, so we have to think about how can we effectively and productively and professionally organize so that we can change some things, some structural things, some very fundamental things, so that we can give even more. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Gerald.
Hi, I'm Rob Garcia. I'm a drummer and composer. I also recently started a 501c3 nonprofit organization called Connection Works. And kind of similar ideals and goals as this organization. And we're based in Brooklyn, and we want to be a music and arts cultural center. I just wanted to come and connect with this, and I want to be on a committee. And I one thing that we really believe in is the audience development. And I'm so glad it's very present here, that idea. You know, because I think there's a lot of people out there. I mean, definitely with kids, bringing music to kids, and but also, you know, adults, people like William was saying that you know, there's lots of musicians going to music school, and then they go back and teach more people to become musicians, and it's just the cycle. And the most of the audience for jazz are musicians, and it can't go on being that way. We need to have people who are non-musicians into this music for it to survive, as it was, you know, 50 years ago when jazz was really popular. So, you know, I think it's important. One thing we want to do is in our concerts is to let the audience in on what's happening musically. What's the creative process? How does the music happen? Give the audience a chance to ask questions. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, and they're non-musicians, very excited about it. Some of them have said, yeah, I mean, you know, it would be great, because sometimes they feel intimidated or they don't know what's happening. And I've done that at a couple concerts of mine, and people seem to respond like, yeah, it was really good to hear about what was happening, because then they can appreciate it in a new way and more. Just organizing is great, and I just jumped into this 501c3. I don't know anything, and I'm learning more and more each day, and I'm learning that there's lots of money out there that people have for the arts, and the way to get it in this, you know, in the way the society is set up is through organizations and being organized and sort of playing that game, being business people. One way to speak to business people or people who have money or education people is showing that, you know, music, you know, what people can learn from music, not just kids who want to be musicians, but just everybody. I mean, music teaches, I'm just reading from my notes here, as we all have experienced, communication, listening, self-expression, community, brotherhood, sisterhood, cooperation, crossing cultural boundaries, and literacy. And those are, you know, words that people want to hear that are very important in society. So, thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
We only have... we have to be out of here by 9, and I want people to sign up for committees. I want to get these people speak, though. So you have short and sweet, okay? And then I'll be over on the side if people need to ask me questions about the committees. I'm sorry.
Hello, hello. Thanks. I'm glad everybody could come out and be part of this. I thank you guys for spearheading this whole thing, and I think it's long overdue and very important. Just a couple quick points. I came up, you know, as a punk rocker. That was my initial exposure to music through cousins and other people. And one of the big themes of punk rock, some of you may or may not know, is what we call, you know, DIY, do it yourself. And it was the idea that you know, punk rock was even probably more marginalized and less popular than any other kind of music in this country. And so they knew that if they didn't do anything themselves, absolutely nothing was going to happen. So I think that's a good example for us going into this, is if we want radio stations to play our music, if we want to see it on TV, do it ourselves. Let's start a radio station. Let's start a TV station. I mean, let's do these things. You know, we have people in our communities that know how to do this. Obviously, everybody, we have a broad base of professional backgrounds here. So those are the kind of things I think we need to put to use and stop looking to other people and say, do it for us, you know, or complain why it's not being done. So DIY, do it ourselves. The other thing I think that's important is I've heard a lot about, you know, looking out into the larger world, into the community, into the politicians, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's important also that we look inside and ask ourselves, you know, what is this thing going to be like, you know, for real? And there was a couple of people that mentioned kind of a more down-to-earth thing. I heard somebody saying, I don't know, something about... Anyway, my point is that, you know, we have to look into how is this organization going to run, who's going to make what decisions, how are things going to get done, which brings up an issue that has killed a lot of things in history, which is cronyism, okay? And that's what we see happening in our government right now, right? Karl Rove just stepped down. Why do you think he stepped down? Well, no. To me, the obvious answer is because
he wants to become a musician.
But he's smart. He wanted to quit while he's ahead. I mean, that's how I see it. He's done so much bad stuff that he knows that at some point it's going to come home to roost. And he'd rather go out like this than go out like a criminal, which he is, in my opinion. But anyway, so cronyism is the point. I think we have to really open this thing up. I'd like to see it be very transparent, the operations from dollars that are coming in to how it's being spent, to who's doing booking, who's deciding who lives in these places, you know, all these kinds of issues. I think that there's a lot of people here that I've heard stories from musicians in the scene about, you know, well, they have a beef with so-and-so, so they can't get into this, and they can't do that, and, you know, they don't want to do this or be part of that because there's these beefs, these interpersonal disses that go on, and people feel slighted by one person, and you know, those are the things that I just think really are petty. This is the year 2007. Folks, we need to, like, step above that, is what I'm saying. And we need to do this right if we're going to do it. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Margaret. I don't think you want me on any committees because I just don't see things the way a lot of other people do. But I wanted to point out that it's good to have money, it's nice to have money, it's great to have a grant, it's wonderful to get funding, it's, you know, groovy to go and talk to politicians. But you're more powerful than that. You're richer than that. If you can play an instrument and you can speak to people with it and you can heal people, you're more than that. You're above that. And falling into this whole thing about money, money, and money is a capitalist game. And you're eating it up, you know? You're going to end up becoming one of them. You know what I'm saying? That isn't where it's at. There are ways to do things with money, and it's easier if you can have it or you can get it. But there are ways to do things without money. And as someone who's been living in New York City from the day I was born and poor every day of my life, I know how to do things without money. And you do too. So you have to decide what you are about. If you're about art, if you're about community, if you're about love, if you're about giving, great. If you're about money, I'm off the committee. Okay?
Good evening. My name's Joe Chanto. I produce a weekly TV show called Some Real Music. Some people have been asking about the media, why don't we have this music on the TV? I've been doing that for over a year now. Tomorrow night's show, it's Wednesday at midnight, has the David S. Ware Quartet, the Buzzcocks, and Saron Crenshaw, a local blues man. Next week's show is 50 violins for Leroy Jenkins and the ICP Orchestra with Misha Mengelberg, Tristan Hansinger, and Han Benning. So if you want to see the music on TV, check it out Wednesday night, midnight, Channel 57. Moving on to a couple of other things, some observations that I've made. If we want to get something done, we can't try and do everything at once. We have to decide what the priority is, what we want to focus on, and get them done one thing at a time. That's how things will get accomplished. As William mentioned earlier, a lot of the investment bankers, the people in power, are criminals. I think for the most part that's undoubtedly true. However, I do think there are probably a few human beings among them, and if we reach out to them in the right way, things can happen, and I think things can happen a lot quicker than we might think. This is a big task, but if people sign up for committees and they work at this stuff seriously and assiduously, a lot of things can get accomplished a lot faster and a lot better than what we might think right now. That's it. Good night. Thanks.
Okay, I guess the sheets over here. The sheets over here, if you want to sign it for. If you want to sign up for a committee, I don't know who that is, but and someone will get in contact with you about a meeting within a committee to discuss what that committee is about and how it's going to be run and what issues are going to be involved with each committee. Okay. Yeah, if you have any questions about a committee you're going to sign up with, ask Patricia Nicholson. She's right over here. And I think that's good for today. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
What committee are you on?
Huh?
I'm on the William Parker committee.
Oh, really?
That's right.